Images of young black protesters being hit with fire hoses and police dogs in 1963 Birmingham are considered iconic. Hank Lebanoff saw them too. He was a 14-year-old paperboy in Florence when the Children's March took place. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner now, and what strikes him is where civil rights coverage wound up in the daily paper.
My hometown newspaper and all of the national media are very much focusing attention, page one attention and lead news item attention on the Children's Crusade and Commissioner Bull Connor's decision to unleash the dogs and the hoses on the demonstrators. It makes page one news everywhere, except in Birmingham.
Klebanoff says not only was the Children's March relegated to lesser news, it was delivered without many pictures.
You know, 43 Negroes were arrested yesterday during a demonstration at Kelly Ingram Park. Very stenographic, very cool, and no images of the dogs or the hoses. So I could not help but notice that the newspaper I'm delivering doesn't put that on page one.
And by stenographic, Klebanoff means reports stated things factually. That raises a question among critics of newspapers in the 1960s. Did the Birmingham papers not cover these events, or did they have the stories and chose not to run them? Barnett Wright is the Jefferson County reporter for the Alabama Media Group and a recent author of 1963, which focuses on the civil rights movement.
Thousands and thousands of photographs, the negatives were put into a file cabinet. It was uncovered by an intern. So the photographs, the iconic images of the movement, were not published by the Birmingham News. Now, if they didn't publish the photographs, that tells me that a lot of the narrative also was ignored or neglected.
But that doesn't sit right with Donald Brown. He was a general assignment reporter for the Birmingham News during the early 60s. And when Martin Luther King Jr. took his movement to Birmingham in April of 63,
Birmingham is the most thoroughly segregated city in our country.
Brown says the local paper responded.
The news staff at the Birmingham News were just given a sort of an open assignment. If we need you to cover a march, if we need you to cover a rally, if we need you to cover a bombing, whatever we need you to cover, be available and be ready 24/7.
Brown says the news staff and photographers went out on almost everything, from marches to bombings. But sometimes covering an event is not enough.
It wasn't my call as a lowly reporter. It was the editors who ran the newspaper, and their call was to put it in the paper if it's a big enough deal, but let's don't make a bigger deal of it.
S. Vincent Townsend was Brown's boss. He was the general manager and editor for a time at the Birmingham News in the early 60s. Brown says Townsend had outside influences forcing him to keep the coverage to a minimum.
The business community, which of course were at that time the primary advertisers of the Birmingham News and were what undergirded the Birmingham News's influence financially, kept the pressure on Mr. Townsend and the management of the news. Keep it down.
Brown says the Birmingham News was able to do that for a few months, but national news started to dictate what and how much of the civil rights movement should be covered. Again, Barnett Wright.
One of the turning points, many believe, is when Harrison Salisbury of the New York Times came down to Birmingham, and he covered, or he talked about the hatred, talked about the segregation, talked about the problems that was happening here in the city. And for many people in the city, they were shocked because that wasn't the image that they got of Birmingham reading the local papers.
While the Birmingham News and the Post-Herald may have kept the news off of the front pages, stories about the civil rights movement made the nightly news on television. Hank Lebanoff went from his paper route to become a winner of the Pulitzer Prize for a book he and co-author Gene Roberts wrote called Race Beat. The book was about the role the press played in the civil rights struggle.
If the whole nation had responded in their news organizations the way the Birmingham newspapers did by deciding this is not news, this is not important, it would have been many, many, many more years of turmoil and dehumanization and death in the South. But ultimately, it was the mere presence of that media coverage that led to the change.
The media's role in bringing many of the significant events of the civil rights movement to light helped the nation to progress towards more equality. In the coming weeks, we'll explore the media's involvement in other significant events in 1963, like the stand in the schoolhouse door and the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing. I'm Ryan Vasquez, APR News in Birmingham.
September 15th, 1963 started off just like any other Sunday for Barbara Cross, with morning Sunday school class down in the basement of 16th Street Baptist Church. Cross remembers that day's Sunday school lesson.
And our Sunday school lesson that day was a love that forgives. I'll never forget that as long as I live. In my class particular, we discuss the scripture from Matthew, the 5th chapter, about talking about a agape love, the godly type of love, and agape is the Greek word for godly love.
It was the first time Pastor John Cross, Barbara's father, initiated Youth Sunday under his ministry. After class, the children were getting ready for their other responsibilities that Sunday.
I remember a good friend of mine came by the classroom, and we were going to go to the bathroom together. And my teacher stopped me. My teacher's name was Mrs. DeMann. And she gave me an assignment that literally spared my life and kept me out of harm's way.
Cross was asked to write the names of those who would be moving up to the next age level in Sunday school. It was just a few minutes later that Sunday would soon be marred by an explosion that would change Birmingham forever.
And I remembered I was in the process of writing the names down. The most horrific noise that I had ever heard in my life. I remember the building shaking. I remember hearing children screaming.
4 young girls died, many more injured, and a community ripped apart by an act of violence on what was supposed to be a peaceful Sunday. Don Brown was a general assignment reporter for the Birmingham News during the early 60s. He was at a church 3 blocks away when the bomb went off.
It was after the church service that I told my wife, take the car on home. I'm going to see what's happened down the street here. And as soon as I saw what's happened, I got a ride to work with a photographer and stayed at work until after midnight that Sunday night.
Local and national media outlets have been criticized for being slow to cover the civil rights movement in Birmingham. But by the summer of 1963, every major news outlet had someone on the ground. After the explosion that rocked the country, news spread fast. And at the Cross residence, the phone was constantly busy right after the explosion, from reporters to family members, like Barbara Cross's uncle in Virginia.
And I remember my mama telling me that he had to interrupt the line because he remembered there was a broadcast, an NBC report, of one of the major networks, that said the 16th Street Baptist Church was bombed in Birmingham, Alabama. And my uncle said, that's my brother-in-law's church. And he told the operator, you got to get me through to that line. I want to be sure if my family is okay.
It wasn't long until word spread that Sunday and everyone around the nation knew what had transpired in Birmingham.
I was preparing, getting ready for church because I went to Sunday school. And my brother called me, said, come quick. Something has happened in Birmingham.
Charles Avery was living just outside of Chicago at the time, but he never forgot his Birmingham roots.
When we heard it on the news, we were almost compelled to get in the car and come to Birmingham then. At that moment, we were so excited and wanted to get back home.
Avery sensed what many were feeling. Former Birmingham news reporter Don Brown says something big was about to happen.
If you could equate the feeling around the city those next few days to somebody having a nervous breakdown, Birmingham was having a serious nervous breakdown.
2 young men were killed later that day, and the National Guard was brought in to keep the peace in the days following the bombing. As national and international media ramped up their coverage, they echoed what Don Brown would hear while covering the Young Men's Business Club in Birmingham.
One of the lawyers, whom I respected, just got up and told his colleagues, Birmingham is dead. This was after the church bombing. And that was the feeling that the national media and Birmingham itself had left itself with. When we saw what we had done at the 16th Street Baptist Church, and I say we because everybody in Birmingham was blamed for that.
50 years later now, and Chuck Morgan's words still ring in the city. Birmingham isn't dead, but it still carries the scars of September 15th with it. And at 16th Street Baptist Church, where it comes up in this first Sunday service.
Don't wait to September 15th. To give God some praise.
Amen.
Every day is a day of thanksgiving. You might not be here September 15th.
The church has taken on civil rights history as a ministry, offering tours of the church and basement where the bomb went off. Pastor Arthur Price Jr.
We've increased our tour ministry when we've gotten here, and we have great volunteers who don't mind telling the story. We produced a documentary chronicling the events of 1963 and the bombing of the church and the trials, bringing the perpetrators to justice. So every year we know that people make a pilgrimage to come to Birmingham to see what happened here 50 years ago.
And it's not uncommon to find visitors from all over taking in a church service on any given Sunday.
Good morning. We have Berea College from Berea, Kentucky, visiting with us on a civil rights tour led by Dr. Alistine Tunley. If you could, would you please stand at this time?
Pastor Price says he has already received calls from over 350 people to attend service on the 50th anniversary this year, including from the White House. On that day, they will recreate the service from September 15th, including the Sunday school lesson that day, A Love That Forgives.
Ye have heard that it hath been said, Thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thy enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you.
An ironic lesson from 50 years ago, and what could be a fitting reminder 50 years later. I'm Ryan Vasquez, APR News in Birmingham. Let's put you in the position of being a black person living in the South during the Civil Rights Movement.
If you picked up a white newspaper, you as a black person did not exist.
Craig Flournoy is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and a professor of journalism at Southern Methodist University.
There was no record of you being born, no record of you graduating from high school, much less college, no record of you getting married, no record of your promotion, and no record of you dying.
In other words, unless you were famous like Joe Louis or Louis Armstrong, a black person might not make it into most white newspapers unless they committed a crime. So when it came to coverage of events surrounding the Civil Rights Movement, there was little, if any, coverage at all. Take the Montgomery bus boycott as an example.
The New York Times basically missed the story.
Again, Craig Flournoy.
They relied on wire service copy for the first 4 months, and the esteemed Johnny Popham, the greatest reporter covering the South during this time, wrote exactly two stories about it. And the way they framed the story that they saw, was a legal contest once the NAACP came in and filed a lawsuit.
I think it is one of the tragedies of our nation, one of the shameful tragedies, that 11 o'clock on Sunday morning is one of the most segregated hours, if not the most segregated hours in Christian America.
While Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. felt that the church pews across the nation remained among the most segregated places in America, Flournoy says the nation's newsrooms weren't much better.
I do believe in fairness, meaning you try to give both sides of the story. And on that basis, white newspapers failed abysmally. They almost never covered the black side of a story.
That was left to black newspapers, often at great risk to the reporters. One of the unsung newsmen of the civil rights era was Emory Jackson. Jackson edited the Birmingham World, which served as a lifeline to blacks about what was going on around the state and world. Jim Baggett is an archivist at the Birmingham Public Library.
You had other black newspapers here. Some would be around for a year, some would be around for a few years, but the World was around for decades.
The library is now home to the newspaper's archives and a collection of Jackson's personal papers.
And with Emory Jackson, who always fought with the paper's owners in Atlanta to have as much local content in the paper as possible, it's really an indispensable record in terms of documenting African-American life in Birmingham during that period.
And not just a record of big events like the Montgomery bus boycott. Jackson's coverage of that pivotal incident is considered some of the best around. But Baggett says even earlier moments in the civil rights movement, such as the 1948 Freedom Train visit, made black newspapers.
Here comes the Freedom Train. You'd better hurry down. Just like a Paul Revere's coming into your hometown.
The Freedom Train was sponsored by the American Heritage Foundation. It was traveling the country, stopping in cities. People could go onto the train. You could see the Emancipation Proclamation, the copy of the Declaration of Independence, all these important documents from American history.
But in many southern cities, lines to get on the train to see the documents were segregated. That didn't sit well with Jackson.
Jackson was one of the people who first raised the issue and then really led the fight here in Birmingham to not have Jim Crow lines outside the Freedom Train. You know, Jackson said we shouldn't have to stand in a segregated line to look at the Emancipation Proclamation.
It was this type of reporting that contributed to Jackson's fearless reputation. He would take on Bull Connor and other segregation-minded officials in his articles, print full names of those he interviewed, and always trying to get both sides of the story. But this also invited danger for the intrepid newsman. Joe Dixon, who worked with Jackson and later bought the Birmingham World, remembers one instance when Jackson went to cover the Dixiecrat Convention in 1948 in Birmingham.
And he told him he couldn't participate. He told him he was the press representing the journalist, and he had just as much right to be as anybody else. They threw him out.
The Dixiecrat Party was a segregationist faction of the Democratic Party that split off because they were unhappy with President Harry Truman and their own party's national plank calling for civil rights. They certainly didn't want a black journalist, especially one of Jackson's tenacity, covering their event.
Emory went back and they put him out again and told him to run, but he didn't run. And I asked him, why didn't you run? He said, if I had run, they would have shot me. So I was trying to get him to steal stuff.
The Birmingham World is long gone, and all that remains is a plaque dedicated to Emory Jackson outside of Nelson Brothers Cafe, which sits near the World's old headquarters. Partially due to his differences on the Birmingham campaign, Jackson's impact on Birmingham gets overlooked today. Joe Dixon, who helped get the plaque dedicated to Jackson, feels Emory has been unfairly remembered by history.
The sad thing about all of this is the treatment that the community has given Emory since he passed. Three people that I don't think really was covered: Emory Jackson, Jesse Walker, Fred Shuttleworth. They never got what they should have gotten.
Martin Luther King Jr. and Fred Shuttlesworth may rightfully be credited as being great civil rights leaders, but without people like Emory Jackson, their role in history might be drastically changed. In Birmingham, I'm Ryan Vasquez, APR News.